The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Friday, and not just any Friday. It's Friday the 13th, which you know, I'm not normally a very superstitious person, but this is 2020, and this has been a year where everything is fucked up, right? So I thought, oh my God, what's worse than Friday the 13th? A Friday the 13th in 2020. However, given the nature, the opposite world nature of this year, Friday the 13th in 2020 might turn out to be a good thing. Why? Well, just about, I don't know, maybe 2 hours ago, this happened.
The final two states we were able to project because the counties in those states are certifying their county vote totals and sending them into the state. We know in Georgia that there's a hand recount underway, but Joe Biden is the winner of Georgia. 14,152 votes ahead of Donald Trump, 49.5% to 49.2%. No Democrat has won Georgia since 1992. This is a huge victory for the Democrats, a state they've long eyed, like a 10-year-long project to flip this red state blue. And Joe Biden did it with explosive growth in the Atlanta suburban area for the Democratic coalition. Big turnout among African-Americans, among women. This is a big prize for the Democrats. And then you noted in North Carolina, Donald Trump is going to hang on to North Carolina. 73,602 votes ahead of Joe Biden. Pretty substantial lead, 50% to 48.6%. Again, we were seeing a majority of the counties reporting in and certifying their vote totals. There is not enough outstanding vote for Joe Biden to come close to overtaking Donald Trump. And therefore, Donald Trump is going to hang on to North Carolina and add its 15 electoral votes to his electoral total. That brings us to Joe Biden at 306 electoral votes. Donald Trump at 232 electoral votes. That is a substantial electoral college victory for Joe Biden. In fact, so substantial, it's precisely the kind of victory that Donald Trump labeled a landslide for himself 4 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
Because that's how many electoral votes he had, 306.
Yes.
And that is what Joe Biden has. And now you've seen the entire map. Color in red and blue. This is your new map of American politics and will set the table for the 2024 presidential election.
Boom! So that happened today. Now, you heard David Chalian, I think is his name, that was from CNN, who finally called it this afternoon. Right? Doesn't matter that the Associated Press called it last Saturday. You know, this is Donald Trump world we're talking about, and people are afraid of him because he's a vindictive asshole. Anyway, but you heard he said 306 to 232. Funny, that was exactly the Electoral College split in the 2016 election when Donald Trump got 306, Hillary Clinton got 232. And what did Donald Trump say about that?
And then we won by a lot. Don't forget, it was 306 to 223. That's a lot.
232.
We had a massive landslide victory, as you know, in the Electoral College.
This was an excuse for the Democrats who lost an election, who actually got their ass kicked.
Oh.
306 to 223.
No,
that's 232. A pretty good shellacking.
232. You know, the man just can't get anything straight because he's a moron. But it's a shellacking. And remember, Donald Trump, well, lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton by about 3 million votes. He lost the popular vote to Joe Biden by 5 million votes. So that all happened. And, you know, and then we go through this whole period where the lowlives in the Republican Party, the people who can't think for themselves, the people who are so afraid of Donald Trump that they won't come out and state the obvious. The election is over. Donald Trump lost because he's a loser. Instead, they're saying all kinds of, you know, they got to do a recount and they were filing lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. By the way, It was a 1, 2, 3. You're out today. He got kicked down for 3 lawsuits. One in Arizona. Well, they dropped the lawsuit in Arizona seeking a review of all ballots cast on Election Day after finding out the margin of victory could not be overcome. Then his legal team in Pennsylvania also closed shop after the Third Circuit Court affirmed the district court and rejected Trump's challenge to the Pennsylvania election law, holding that the plaintiffs don't have standing. And then in Michigan, a judge rejected their lawsuit to prevent certification of Wayne County election results. The court ruling, quote, plaintiff's interpretation of events is incorrect and not credible. Yeah, that covers all the bases. That makes Trump and his allies 1-14 in court. They won one very minor thing that I think gave them 3 ballots, and they lost 14. And yet, Donald Trump gets up in the Rose Garden today, first time he's spoken publicly since he lost. Well, since the night, I guess the morning of November 4th, or was it November 5th, when he went, at like 2:30 in the morning, he declared, "We won! We won!" Even though he was losing horribly, because he's deranged. There's something seriously wrong with him. So, and then all his sycophants are afraid to say anything. Even Senator Chris Coons says, "I know our Republican colleagues, you know, are quietly, they're not saying anything publicly, but to me, they're coming up to me and they're saying, tell Joe congratulations." Well, you know what, you chicken shit, say it yourself. So Andrew Kaczynski over at CNN, the K-File, put together a montage of sorts, they call it a supercut, of those same people crying about the Democrats allegedly contesting the results in 2016. But if I remember correctly, the very next morning, Hillary Clinton conceded. So this didn't happen 4 years ago. The Democrats, even though they lost, were the adults in the room. But on the other hand, this happened 4 years ago. Uh-oh. Where is it?
Based on no evidence, this was a legitimate election, and no one should question the fact that Donald Trump is the president-elect.
It's a fascinating group of these Democrats who can't seem to realize that it is time to move on. It is time to accept the fact that Trump will be the next president of the United States.
Hillary is on her sore loser tour, and now we have her going through recounts. You know what she needs to do?
Oh, my God.
She needs to get over it. She lost. Get out of the way and let Donald Trump be president.
Do you think the Democrats are sore losers? Yeah, I do.
The reality is they're a bunch of squirrel crybabies.
Oh, my God.
Newsflash for many of the partisan Democrats and those in the mainstream media who continue to try to delegitimize President-elect Trump's massive and historic win last month. The election's over. Hillary Clinton lost. You have to win 270 electoral votes to be elected president, and President-elect Trump actually got 306. This is all really just an effort to try to delegitimize the win.
The left's going to lie. The left's going to be smart. They can't accept the election results, let alone the fact that he's actually going to solve problems.
They have to decide whether they're going to interfere with him finishing his business, with the peaceful transition, transfer of power to President-elect Trump and Vice President-elect Pence, or if they're going to be a bunch of crybabies and sore losers about an election that they can't turn around.
This is America. We live in a democracy. Everybody, when they woke up in the morning, is registered to vote, could go choose. So how about respecting the majority that also live here, and their vote should count?
Hello, boy, talk about a mirror image. I that needs a little bit of laughter because it's kind of hysterical seeing everyone from Kim Guilfoyle to Kellyanne Conway to Rudy Giuliani all saying they're sore losers and crybabies. Hello, welcome to 2020. So I've got a bit of a conundrum here. It's a busy, busy day. In addition to doing this show, which is live right now from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm also guest hosting the Bradcast for Brad Friedman tonight. And this show is not a live show. It's a podcast, and it's, you know, it runs on a number of stations. And so immediately when I get off the air at 6, I've got to go into Bradcast mode and piece together the show and then upload it in a number of different configurations because it's a pain in the ass. And so,
I was struggling. I already decided I was going to air the Wendell Potter interview from earlier this week because that's an important topic. And Brad didn't cover the Supreme Court hearing on the Affordable Care Act because he was so deep into the election coverage. So we have that ready to go. And then I figured I've got the news. And then I reached out to a couple of people and both of these people came through. First off, I called, you know, you may remember this story. Those of you who've been with me long enough, or you've heard me tell the story perhaps, but some years back, I noticed I was friends on Twitter. We followed each other. James E. Carter IV, Jimmy Carter's grandson. He was the one who in 2012 found or got that audio of Mitt Romney talking about the 47%. Remember that? Boy, times were so much simpler then, weren't they? So James E. Carter was a, you know, a Twitter friend of mine. And at one point, I remembered asking him if, you know, why the Carter Center didn't send out election watchers to monitor our elections here in the U.S. because our elections are pretty fucked up. I know they are in the rest of the world, and that's where the Carter Center sends out teams to observe, you know, elections. And what James told me back then was, we don't qualify. We because we have a different election system in each state, we don't qualify for the Carter Center program because we're too all over the place. Well, this morning, I saw a tweet that said, now I can't find it, but said something to the effect of, I need to learn to copy these things so I have them at the ready. basically, the tweet said something along the lines of, the Carter Center got cleared by the Georgia Secretary of State and is now going to participate and observe the audit recount in Georgia. So I reached out to James, who said, you know what? I'm so out of the loop on this stuff. Here's the number. Call my cousin, Jason Carter. He's the chair of the Carter Center. And so we played, you know, text tag all day. And finally, about an hour before showtime, he called and we taped an interview, which I will run on Brad's show. And then I had also reached out to my friend, Jack Rice. Jack Rice, former CIA caseworker, who's also an attorney, who also was a colleague of mine at Air America. He's a great talk show host, just an all-around smart guy. And I wanted to ask him about, you know, what Trump is doing with the firing of all these Defense Department officials, Homeland Security officials, and we've heard perhaps intelligence officials as well. And so at the last minute, he got back to me too. Problem is, we talked for 20 minutes and I have Thomas Frank joining us in about 15. So I think what we'll do is I will put out a bonus podcast this weekend with the Jack Rice interview and with the Jason Carter interview. It'll be a free podcast. I'll post it at NicoleSandler.com, you know, and I'll tweet it out and Facebook it and all that stuff. And again, my podcast, I don't, you know, is not behind a paywall. So you can get it. Although I do, you know, operate on your donations. That's what pays my salary. So if you like what you hear, feel free to contribute something, throw something into the hopper. But that's what I'm going to do. But so not to be rushed, and I don't want to lose a minute with Thomas Frank. Now, Thomas Frank, you know, is the guy who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas? Listen, Liberal, The Wrecking Crew, his new one, The People Know. And he was going to join us on November 4th. I invited him to come on with me the day after Election Day, which also just happened to be my birthday, thinking who better to have a conversation with the day after Election Day than Thomas Frank, because he is one of my, not only one of my favorite, you know, nonfiction authors, but one of my favorite people to interview as well. He's been on the show many, many times over the years. And on that afternoon, like early afternoon, I get an email from him saying, I'm so sorry, my flight was delayed. He was flying back home that day, but he thought he'd be home by 5:30. He said, my flight was delayed. I can't make it today. I'm so sorry. So turns out he's joining us today, the day the election is called. Although, again, Donald Trump did not acknowledge it. So we hadn't heard from him in a week. Right. A week. It was a week without hearing that voice. It was actually wonderful. Then he walks out in the Rose Garden. Go figure. Everybody who was there in attendance, the chairs were spaced 6 feet apart. They were all wearing masks. This is the home of the super spreader event. His last two events had people packed shoulder to shoulder, no masks, no social distancing, none of that, no safety measures, and they turned into super spreader events. Both the Amy Coney Barrett announcement and his election night party, a lot of people have come down with COVID. Go figure how that works. Amazing. So Donald Trump gets up there, his hair is gray. it doesn't have the Aryan yellow dye job. I guess, you know, he's been just soaking up his self-pity and he didn't let his hairstylist come in or the $70,000 that he allotted for his hair has run out. Either way, Donald Trump was gray today. And I did notice that a lot of other people on Twitter did as well. The Aryan yellow dye job is gone. It'll be back. Don't worry. It'll be back tomorrow. But it was the first thing I noticed, other than he looks really tired. And he's reading off his script, talking about the vaccine, basically said, New York, you don't get it because your governor doesn't trust me, or some shit like that. Again, the petty bullshit stuff. What he didn't do? He didn't talk about the election. It was all, you know, the vaccine and taking credit for something he had nothing to do with. That's not even done yet. But, you know, that's what you expect from Donald Trump. So he speaks. I don't know. He spoke for about 10 minutes, which was about 10 minutes too long. Then he said, I'm going to turn it over to these doctors. And then Mike Pence, he took no questions. He didn't address the election. He didn't say, I'm a loser. He didn't congratulate Joe Biden. He didn't concede. And the closest he came, he did come close. This is what he said, almost admitting that there's going to be another administration. Or not. I guess it doesn't want to play it for you. All right. Well, I'm not going to. What he said was, this administration won't have a lockdown. So that happened. Is it the work here?
Ideally, we won't go to a lockdown. I will not go. This administration will not be going to a lockdown. Hopefully, the whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be. I guess time will tell. But I can tell you this administration will not go to a lockdown.
Yeah, this administration. I don't know what will happen in the future, whatever. Boy, he tied himself in knots, not to say the Biden-Harris administration may do something. I don't know, because they take over on January 20th. No, they didn't go there. So all that happened. And here we are. You know, the other thing that's going, I've got tons of news, but I don't want to start anything again because, you know, Thomas Frank is going to join us. So let me go through a couple of quick stories that have just popped through my timeline today and crossed my desk. Charles Koch, one of the one Koch brother who's still alive, David died last year or the year before or whatever. Charles Koch has an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Just let me read this to you because I can't even paraphrase it because my head will explode. Via the Wall Street Journal, Mr. Koch has since come to regret his partisanship, which he says badly deepened divisions. Oh, he has a new book. That's what this is about, the book. So in his book, he writes, boy, did we screw up. What a mess. Still, his political spending remains almost entirely partisan. Koch Industries PAC and employees donated $2.8 million in the 2020 campaign cycle to Republican candidates and $221,000 to Democratic candidates, according to the Center for Republican Responsible Politics. So he's trying to, rewrite history there. It won't work. Oh, and then there's this. I mentioned they were social distancing at the White House today. More than 130 Secret Service officers who help protect the White House and the president when he travels have been ordered to isolate or quarantine because they tested positive for the coronavirus or had close contact with infected coworkers. 130 Secret Service officers. The spread of this virus has sidelined roughly 10% of the Secret Service's core security team. Talk about irresponsible and just, I'm sorry, fucked up. This man put all those people in danger. And let me tell you what's happening at the House of Representatives tonight. Nancy Pelosi's having a big dinner for the incoming freshman class. They had pictures on the interweb. And the tables are nicely far apart. Are you kidding me? We're in the midst of not only a global pandemic, but the worst part of the pandemic. Infections are spiking. Hospitalizations are spiking. Intensive care units are full. They have no beds. In North Dakota, and now I hear in Illinois, where a friend of the show, Sue, works at a hospital, they're telling nurses who've tested positive but are asymptomatic, come in anyway. We know you tested positive, but we're so short on healthcare personnel, we need you. If you're not sick, you may have tested positive. If you're asymptomatic, even though we know you're infectious, you can come in and work anyway. The same kind of stuff we saw that was happening in New York back in March and April is now happening everywhere. And it's happening worst in states that voted for Donald Trump. He is responsible for this. He of the non-mask persona, that's not for me. He of the no social distancing. He of the big rallies. He of the killing what is soon to be a quarter of a million Americans. It just blows my mind. And then, all right, we're going to talk with Thomas Frank about this too, about the Democrats should have taken control of the Senate, should have picked up some seats in the House. That's not what happened. And in fact, in Alabama, they elected Tommy Tuberville over Doug Jones. Doug Jones, he kind of, blue dog. Yeah, I know the blue dogs are in the House, not in the Senate, but a conservadem. But it's Alabama. And he was doing a damn fine job. And he was replaced. The people from Alabama elected Tommy Tuberville with something like 60% of the vote. Tommy Tuberville was a football coach at Auburn, so a college football coach. He has no business sitting in the U.S. Senate. He has no record of service to the country. He has no public service experience, no political experience, and obviously he doesn't know jack shit about history either. Apparently, he believes that World War II was fought to free Europe from socialism. A quote from a recent interview he gave says, "My dad fought 76 years ago in Europe to free Europe of socialism."
Bullshit.
Because that's not what World War II was about. And you obviously don't know what it was about and don't know what the word socialism means. You may as well come to Florida. Now, as for his expectations for next year, the senator-elect added, and this is a direct quote, "Our government wasn't set up for one group to have all three branches of government. It wasn't set up that way, our three branches, the House, the Senate, and executive." I have to laugh, because if I don't laugh, I cry. In third grade, I knew the three branches of government were the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. But the new senator from Alabama doesn't know that, doesn't know what World War II was fought about, and doesn't know what the three branches of government are. So Thomas Frank, who's joining us in a couple of minutes, in the days, you know, following the election, you know, his book is out, but the book was written before the election happened. And he wrote a piece for The Guardian on the day after, well, the Associated Press called the contest. It's now 6 days later. It takes everyone else that long to catch up. But he wrote a piece for The Guardian calling on Joe Biden to look at the historical conditions that made Trump's reign possible, right? And conditions that the Democratic Party had a big role in creating. So he writes about that in a piece called Ding Dong, The Jerk is Gone. But read this before you sing the hallelujah chorus. So I thought we would talk to him about it before we sing anything. So let me get our shot together. I just need to get rid of this picture. And I can bring in Thomas Frank. I love it when it works so flawlessly like this. Hey, Tom.
Nicole, are you saying it worked?
Well, this worked. My technical stuff here worked, which every day is a process. So
can you actually see me?
I see you. I see you.
I can't
hear
see you.
You
on.
Oh,
this
you
thing.
Can't. Oh, I'm going to fix that right now. You will be able to in just a moment. Hold
okay.
on. Start, and I'm going to make it so that you can see me too. I have to get something wrong every time. There we are.
Hey. How about that?
Yeah, it's magic.
That's awesome. But I see, but my thing is I can't look at the computer screen because it makes my glasses all blue. So
right, and you're
so
looking away.
I've got the camera right. over here on a different part of the room and I'm looking
right. Right, it looks like you're always looking around to see what someone else is saying. Like,
yeah, yeah. What sure is she okay. saying over there?
So Thomas Frank, I had originally asked you to join us on November 4th, which was the day after Election Day, which happened to be my birthday. And you were stuck in an airport or something. You're traveling during this pandemic?
Not very often. I was traveling that day. I'm trying to remember what day The Guardian put the story up. They
that
put it up
7th.
As soon as the AP called the
right.
election. I think it
8th.
Took several days.
Yes, right.
Yeah, this is they always, you know, they're very responsible. And so they wait until everything is, you know, stamped on both sides and all that kind of thing.
Right. And
yes, I went
7th.
To visit my dad in Kansas City. It was his 92nd birthday.
Oh, wow. Is he November 4th, too?
November 1st.
Oh, okay. Well,
no,
still,
I was there for the whole week.
Nice.
And
you're a good
no,
son.
I don't like traveling during COVID. This is the first time I've been on an airplane in a year.
Oh.
Maybe even more. I did drive out there in the summer. I drove to Kansas City. I did the drive in one day. It was really, really, really unpleasant. but I was glad to be there. It's a really nice place. If you've never been there, I don't know. Maybe you've
never Kansas City.
Never?
No, never been to Kansas.
Okay, well, it's a wonderful place.
I'm a coast person, except for a little 4-month stint in Taos, New Mexico. I'm a coastal person. I'm one of those elites. I'm one of those people. And I lasted 4 months in Taos. Anyway, that's not why we're here today. Thomas Frank, I want to get your thoughts on what happened and what is still happening. Did you catch the now gray-haired orange man in the Rose Garden about an hour ago?
Yes, I watched part of it, but it was so boring, I turned it off. Yeah, so his hair appears to have changed color. Am I right, or am I imagining
the
things?
The Aryan yellow hair dye must have faded during his week of isolation, where he was afraid to go near anybody because he lost. That's all I could figure. He was gray.
Yeah, well, look. I mean, look what's happened to me.
But
here.
That's okay.
You know,
that's
seen
natural.
You, I haven't seen you in a while, not since, you know.
Well, just a month or two ago when the book came out.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know.
But yeah, he must have run out of the Aryan yellow hair dye or something. but so the thing is, he gets up there, first time he's spoken publicly in over a week since his 2:30 in the morning little tirade. I won. If we count only the legal votes, I won.
Isn't this guy is just unbelievable, isn't he?
It really is. I mean, if it weren't so serious, it would be hysterically funny. Right.
Yeah. It's so, you know, everybody's debating this now. And I'm trying to be, you know, you would never think. I know your listeners think of me as this kind of extreme leftist and this kind of crazy person. But
no, they don't.
I feel like I'm the voice of reason on this. He lost. There's nothing he can do. There's no provision in our system, you know, just because he doesn't feel like losing. It doesn't work that way. It's just too bad. He's going to have to pack his bags for Mar-a-Lago.
Exactly.
The interesting twist here is that he's clearly planning on running again.
That's what he says. I don't think he's going to run again. He didn't like this job. He sucked at it, though he won't admit that. And he doesn't like it.
Suck at it. That's the funny thing. He should have been repudiated in a kind of massive way. And he wasn't, because when you go back and look over his presidency, he did precious little good. And he, when faced with the only real challenge of his presidency, he dropped the ball almost immediately. And, you know, all of these people, and I know I've called him a proto-fascist and stuff like that. This guy doesn't know how to be an authoritarian. History just handed him the perfect, the perfect moment for it. This COVID pandemic, a real authoritarian would have risen to the challenge. This guy didn't do anything.
No, except
he doesn't even know how to do that.
Right. He just pretends it's not there. It's not real. It's going away. Just like his thing today. I actually stuck through his whole thing until he handed it off to one of the doctors there who wasn't his quack Fox Dr. Atlas. It was a real doctor. And they were social distancing and wearing masks. But he totally ignored the election. That's the reason the networks carried it, because
They thought he was going to say something.
Because all the networks finally called the race for Joe Biden.
I will be so thankful to not have to think about this guy anymore.
Yep.
For a lot of different reasons. I think one of the things is that he's made the it's not entirely his fault, but the media has gone insane in the age of Trump.
Yep.
Absolutely nuts. I mean, I can't even watch CNN anymore. It's like they've given up all pretense of objectivity, and they indulge this kind of impulse to hysteria. They love getting hysterical. They love scaring their viewers and making people angry at one another. They absolutely love it. And I will be real pleased when that's over. But, to get back to the Guardian article, and I know you were talking about it before you let me on the air here.
Right.
Because I could hear you with my Trump powers.
Yes.
The, obviously, agenda item number one for Joe Biden is the pandemic.
Absolutely.
It's still going on.
Right.
But item number two has to be figuring out how to stop another Donald Trump from becoming president. And by that, I don't mean, let's go out and disenfranchise a whole lot of people.
Well, how about we get rid of the Electoral College and go by a popular vote?
Yeah. But I'm not talking about any sort of structural thing like that. Because once you start, I think they should do away with the Electoral College. It's screwed up so many elections now. But I'm not talking about any kind of structural reform. What I'm talking about is, just in straight up political terms, that what the Democrats have done and they really have to take a long, hard look in the mirror at how they have made this whole sort of crazy Republican Party possible. How it's possible for a guy like Donald Trump to keep going. And what I'm referring to is their vaunted move to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 1990s, it actually began before the 1990s, back in the 70s and the 80s, when the Democratic Party was, they were arguing with one another, and they basically decided they didn't want to be a party of the left anymore. And Nicole, this has been something I've been talking about my entire career as a commentator, which is now coming to an end. We'll talk about that later. But in my entire career as a commentator, this 30-year experiment that the Democratic Party has been on, what is it? We live in a middle class society with this locked in political system of two parties. What happens when one of the two parties in such a society decides, the party of the left in such a society decides it doesn't want to be a party of the left anymore? And that's what's happened with our beloved Democrats. And I would say that, Ronald Reagan and, the great sort of move to the great shift to the right has been important. I think the Democratic shift to the right is probably just as important, if not. Now I think the Republican shift to the right is probably more important, but the
Republican shift was to the batshit crazy. not just the right.
Are you allowed to say that?
I am, because we're on the internet. We are not on any terrestrial radio stations. So you can say anything you want.
Well,
here.
All right then. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, you asked for it then. Yeah, here it comes.
Go for it. You're not going to out potty me, I promise you.
Yeah. So the what happens when a party of the left decides it doesn't want to be a party of the traditional left anymore, and it wants to be something different? It wants to be a party of the sort of affluent white collar suburbanites, who they call the learning class, mm-hmm. or the creative class, or whatever it is. Well, you know, they've done quite well at fundraising. I mean, today's Democratic Party, you know, they routinely outspend the Republicans,
yeah.
which was unthinkable just 10 years ago. I'm sure when we get all the final numbers in, Biden will have massively outspent the billionaire Trump. Yeah. Did you see the news today? Charles Koch?
Yes. Say, I made a mistake. Oh, come on. Do you believe that?
Well, but this is, look, that's the world we're living in now. So right. The Democratic move to the right is bearing fruit. You've got, you know, the Koch brothers now think that they were wrong and they're sorry and they want to, you know, be on the side of the Democrats.
Right.
And look. Wall Street, when I was a kid, the idea that Wall Street was the most Republican institution in America. Mm-hmm. Now they routinely give more to the Democrat. Wow. Silicon Valley, I wrote a book about Silicon Valley and their sort of libertarian fantasies back in the 1990s. They're Democrats now. Wow. I think about all of these Republican counties, like the county I grew up in, Johnson County, Kansas, hadn't gone for a Democrat since Woodrow Wilson. Well, they went for Biden just the other day. It's incredible. These very, very affluent, very highly educated places going for the Democrats. So in that sense, this strategy has been phenomenally successful. But you look at the results of it, which are, you know, they deregulated Wall Street. Mm-hmm. They gave us NAFTA. You know, they deindustrialized huge parts of the Midwest. They gave up on working class people and working class organizations. And the great prison crackdown, welfare reform.
Yep.
This is what happens when, the biggest thing they can boast of, I think, is Obamacare, which
was Mitt Romney, was Romney care.
It's just, yeah. It's just not that great.
It was a Republican idea system. Right.
And, as everyone can see in the course of this pandemic, this is, in policy terms, these people have yielded disaster. You know, they were, you look back to Lyndon Johnson, it was all about sharing prosperity. Well, our society isn't concerned with that anymore. We're a plutocracy now. This is a society where the greatest concern is like, how do you, you know, concentrate the wealth in the hands of these highly educated people, the people that graduated from the right schools, and make sure that they stay wealthy and that the wealthy class of America is a like fair demographic representation of the rest of the country. That's what we think of as, you know, that's what it's all about. And that's a society that is, it might look good from the top. And I'm just sick of saying this. I've been saying this for 25 years. It might look good from the top, but this is a sick society. This is a society that is coming apart.
Well, it is. You know, can I just say, you mentioned CNN and CNN.
This is my first book. This came out in 1997.
Oh, wow.
Can you read it? Commodify your dissent. The business of culture in the new gilded age.
The new gilded age.
Oh. We said that in 1997.
Oh, we didn't know anything then.
I know. And it was, yeah. Well, looking forward, you know, to the world that we were entering, to the society that we were becoming.
Right.
Yeah. And we thought inequality was bad in 1997.
It's amazing. But so you mentioned CNN. I want to bring up the other phenomenon that happened. You talk about the Democratic Party moving right. MSNBC, which was allegedly like the liberal bastion. Have you noticed?
I used to be on there all the time.
They've been taken over by the Never Trumpers. Nicole Wallace, who was Bush's communications director, who, along with Steve Schmidt, who's one of their biggest stars, I guess, they're the ones responsible for bringing a Sarah Palin. And all of a sudden, now they're the voice of the MSNBC.
Yeah, they're the leaders of your party. Get used to it, lady.
Exactly. And, so they screwed up their party. Now they've come for ours.
Yeah, they're coming to screw up yours. Well, that's the nature. That's what we're talking about. I mean, so I used to have a joke in Kansas. I mean, one of my sort of the lessons of my life is that we're all Kansas now, but I used to have this joke that in Kansas, the Democratic Party was, you know, which is a very small and weak, it's a Republican state, always has been since it was founded, but that the Democratic Party in Kansas was basically a faction of the Republican Party. And it's like, well,
it is now.
That's everywhere now. That's what we all are now. And you might not like it, but I got news for you. You know, that's that they run your party, and you better get used to it.
Yeah, but you look at the results, at what happened. Okay, so the Democrats had huge losses in House seats, and the Senate, which they should have taken back control of, they didn't do well there either. And in the House, on a conference call a couple of days right after the election, all of the blue dogs who were voted in 2018, who all lost, were complaining. It's because of those progressives and, you know, the socialism and the defund the police. And I just want to play something that Bernie Sanders said today. It's all of a minute long. And I know you'll listen to Bernie as I will.
Yeah, I will. Yeah.
He pushed back on that. Here's what he said.
Something like 100 congressional candidates ran on Medicare for All. Do you know how many of them lost?
None.
Zero. I think one candidate who ran on a Green New Deal lost. And the reason for that is that these proposals are popular proposals. So the idea of blaming our ideas on their defeat, I'm not sure that that's true. I think the converse may be true.
Yep.
A lot of people out there were listening to some Democrats and saying, what do you stand for? Are you going to represent us when we are hurting so much? Do you have the guts to take on powerful special interests? Are you going to raise that minimum wage? Are you going to fight for health care for all? I don't want to go bankrupt because I can't afford to pay my medical bill. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to make sure that my kid can afford to go to college? So I would turn that argument around and say to some of my more conservative Democratic friends, maybe the problem is that the working class of this country did not perceive that you were prepared to stand up and fight for them.
Oh,
there you go. Right. He's
the working class of this country. Well, you know, the Democrats have been slowly but surely turning their backs on those people for a long time. And look, Bernie's entirely right. Medicare for all, universal health care is enormously popular. Yep. It's also really the idea of college being affordable is also enormously popular. You go down the list, there's a whole bunch of ideas like that, and they tend to. But this faction of the Democratic Party that's so sad right now, that's crying so hard, they don't believe in those things. And you know, socialism. Republicans are going to call you socialist no matter what.
Exactly. They called Joe Biden a socialist, and I said that was what was going to happen. Everyone
they
during
the
primaries.
The
oh, if Bernie wins, they're going to use the socialism against him. I said, if Joe Biden wins, they will call him a socialist too. Hello.
Yeah. That's not an argument. I mean, that's just like I have no idea how you're going to make the Republicans stop doing that. You're not going to. They're going to continue to.
And
do
look,
that.
I'm in South Florida.
The Democrats have control over ultimately is their own party and the direction that they're going in their own party.
But
and,
do they? Because the leadership is still Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn. Really?
Nicole, you know, I wrote this article for the Guardian, and I'm perfectly willing to admit they're never going to do any of the things that I suggest.
No.
But, you know, you and I as thinking people have to understand it anyways, okay, that this is the lousy political system that we've got in this country, and it is going to continue to deliver people like Donald Trump until the day you get an actual party of the left. I mean, you got the same problem in the UK where you had the Labour Party over there decided, you know, it was in the Clinton era. This is all of these people sort of joined hands and jumped off the cliff together and decided that they called it the third way.
Right.
They were going to be new Democrats or new Labour, as in the case of the UK. And they were going to they weren't going to, be traditional parties of the working class any longer. That was played out. They didn't believe in it. This was the information age, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you can tell them, you know, you can point out, as I did earlier in the show, that everything they believed in, everything that was all of their signature achievements turned to ashes in their mouths. They were all disasters, all of them. And you can point out to them that what they've actually given us is this, you know, is a plutocracy, is a profoundly unequal society. But the thing that they've given us that they really have to answer for is they have this, you know, this radicalized Republican Party that is slowly but surely stealing their old base away from them. You know, back in the Clinton days, the Democrats used to have a saying, they got nowhere else to go. Remember, they used to say about all these different groups. They say that about people like me. And that was the kind of genius of Trumpism, is that he explicitly gave these people somewhere else to go. And he, I mean, you know, I don't want to, I told you I was not going to be the voice of panic and hysteria, that I was going to be the voice of sense, but there is a way in which I think the Democrats need to be panicking. If you look at the results with black voters and Latino voters, mm-hmm. they are slowly but surely moving towards the Republicans, Latino voters a lot more so than black voters. This phenomenon is just getting started. I don't want to say I predicted it, because I said it wouldn't happen under Trump. I said that Trump's brand of like pseudo populism, his sort of Trump is a fake leftist. That's the whole genius of all this stuff. They use this leftist rhetoric, this fake liberationist language. They use this all the time. I call it pseudo populism. They use this language all the time. And because Trump was such a bigot, and Trump, you know, managed to offend every, you know, ethnic group out there, I didn't think Trump would be able to branch out from the white working class
vote.
But I said, you wait till you get the next Trump.
Yeah.
The next Trump will, you know, will be smarter than that, won't make these stupid mistakes like Trump did. And you will see this happening. The Republicans will rope in other working class parts of the population. You watch, it is going to happen. Well, it happened. It happened before Trump even left the White House, and it's going to happen more. This is going to go on and on and on until the day the Democrats sort of reverse course, or we get a new, you know, a new party that's like a Bernie Sanders party. Unfortunately, Nicole, they're never going to do that.
No. No, because we've had the
chance. They like being the party of the rich. They it. It's nice. It's nice being the, you know, the Republican Party in the 1950s. That's a sweet place for a politician to be. It's good to be the party of Wall Street. You get to build these. I always compare Harry Truman's presidential library to like Bill Clinton's. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I haven't.
Well, since you've never been to Kansas City, of course you don't. You've never been to Harry Truman's library.
I've never been to Hope, Arkansas either. So. Yeah.
Wait, say that again. I missed it.
I've not been to Hope, Arkansas either.
It's in Little Rock.
Oh, it's in Little Rock. I haven't been to Arkansas. Yeah. You know, I'm your typical liberal elite. I don't do the flyover.
The Obama library isn't built yet, but it's going to be in Chicago, and it's going to be, I'm sure, the most expensive. So they get more expensive as the years go by. So like George W. Bush currently holds the record. But before that, Bill Clinton's was the most expensive. Anyhow, there are these fantastic edifices, you know, these beautiful libraries, you know, filled with propaganda.
Sure, of course.
it's this, no other country has things like this, where these presidents build monuments to themselves.
Well, other countries build monuments to their leaders, but we're
this is the guy. They go out and fundraise and then build a monument to themselves. Anyhow, the punchline here is that Harry Truman, you know, was the last president who didn't have a college degree. He was a, you know, a typical liberal Democrat of the time, of his day, which meant that he was kind of, you know, pro-labor, you know, pro-working class. That's what the Democrats were. It was a different kind of a different party than they are today. And when he retired from the presidency, you know, Dwight Eisenhower got elected. Truman didn't run that year. That was 52. And he went back to Kansas City, Independence, Missouri. He went back there and moved back into his mother-in-law's house.
Oh, God.
And the reporters who traveled with him asked him, they said, you know, what's the first thing you did when you got home, Mr. Truman? And he said, you know, I carried the suitcases up to the attic. It's just like, and then he just resumed life as an ordinary person, you know, working on his car and stuff. And he didn't have any source of income because the president didn't have a pension at the time.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I know. So he had real problems, but eventually he did go out and tried to raise money. He did raise money to build the first ever presidential library. It was the first one.
Okay.
And if you ever go to Kansas City, you should visit it. It's one story.
Okay. I will. Absolutely.
Let's put it this way. It's a very modest, it's a very modest edifice. And it cost about $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. So in the mid 1950s. So when, you know, Bill Clinton's, I don't know how much it cost, but it's on the range of $300 or $400 million. And then George Bush has topped that, and Barack Obama's will top that. Well, you can't do things like that if you're the party of Harry Truman.
Right.
But you can do it if you're the party of Wall Street in Silicon Valley.
Right.
Yes.
And that's the problem. They want to straddle both worlds. So, Thomas Frank, what is the answer? How does the Democratic Party turn this around? Because the way we're going, I believe the only reason we won is because Donald Trump is such a vile creature.
He's so incompetent.
Right.
Well, that he bungled this epidemic so
horribly.
Badly. I mean, Nicole, just between you and me, you know, don't tell your listeners this, but if it hadn't been for COVID, he would have been reelected easily.
Oh, I think so,
too. The economy was roaring before COVID.
Not that was due to him.
That's right. But he's arguably understands that more than he understands other things, you know, than he understands this. He doesn't understand COVID at all. He doesn't understand anything.
He's a bullshitter.
He doesn't even begin to know how to express empathy.
He's a master bullshitter and marketer. And the fact that every time he is near a microphone, he says, I'm the best ever at fill in the blank. And people believe him because you repeat something enough times, people believe it. That's how advertising works.
I would say there's something wrong with the way his brain works.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That everything is about him, he himself, everything. You know, I am going to be so relieved when he's gone. But here's the thing. So it's either he or one of his cronies is going to be running in 4 years.
Yeah.
And they're going to basically resume where he left off. And the thing is that in the hands of a smarter Trump, it's going to be Trumpism is going to be considerably more dangerous.
Right. Well, hopefully it'll be
a smarter person.
Don Jr. who runs, who's as
Don
much
Jr.,
of an idiot
yeah,
as his dad.
Ivanka,
or Ivanka. Or Eric.
Or Ted Cruz or Marco
God.
Rubio.
Oh,
all of them are making noises. And all of them are smarter than him. And they won't make the kind of mistakes that he made. I don't think any of them will. Look, what does Biden have to do? One thing is he has to do, if Biden just gets lucky and delivers, you know, fixes the coronavirus and delivers a roaring economy, then Biden will probably get reelected. You know,
but
whatever.
he's being left with an economy that's going to crash because people are going to lose their homes. They're losing
their
jobs
now. Yeah.
Even worse.
It has crashed.
Right.
That has happened.
Right.
On the other hand, if Biden, you know, if he channels that inner FDR, and he does some of those things that Bernie was talking about on the in the recording that you played a minute ago. Those things are massively popular.
I know.
How do you get here's the question. This is the question that absolutely flummoxes Washington, D.C., the liberals in Washington. They cannot figure this out. What would a party, let's say, Nicole, you have a party of the left, what would they do to win working class votes? And people in Washington are like, I don't know. That's a really hard question. And I'm like, that's what parties of the left are supposed to be. That's who the votes of people they're supposed to be winning. It's really easy to figure it out. You deliver higher wages, you know, you give them greater say in their lives.
That's
you get them better health care. You make school affordable. You make people like Bernie said in that. So you don't have to declare medical bankruptcy anymore all the time. It's incredibly easy to figure out what to do. If Biden does those things strategically, focused on Trump's base, delivers for those people, then you have a good chance of stopping Trumpism in its tracks. But Nicole, I have been saying this for 20 years.
I
showed you almost 20 years. And the Democrats are simply not interested.
I'll tell you, it goes back to leadership. And if we don't have a generational and an attitudinal shift, the Democratic Party, as we know it today, is bound for the graveyard.
Well, look, that's harsh, but let me put it slightly differently. They're very happy with being who they are.
Wow.
They like being who they are. They're very proud of themselves. They believe that they are highly moral people. They don't feel like they've dropped the ball. You know, they're
Jim Clyburn said, "We're the vision of the future." He said that on TV the other day.
Exactly.
What?
And they've been saying that since the Democratic Leadership Council and the Atari Democrats back in the 80s.
That's right.
You know, this is the future and we're in tune with it. And that's why we're going to deregulate Wall Street. And that's why we're going to deregulate telecoms. And that's why we're going to get NAFTA. And that's why we're going to get PNTR China, because globalization, Nicole, globalization. Here it comes. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. Did you see that press conference with it wasn't a press conference. It was Rahm Emanuel, like one of the sort of
war
horses of the new Democrats, where he was talking about, this is something they always say. He was saying these people who've lost their jobs, their way of life, blowing away in the wind, you know. And he's saying there's nothing anybody can do about that. Those jobs are not coming back.
Right.
It's like, nice going, Rahm. First of all, you just lost their votes. That's the way, you know, way to get Trump reelected. Mm-hmm. Second of all, you know, it's not true. There's all kinds of things that a political party, especially one that holds the presidency, can do to help out, you know, the 100 million Americans that live in the deindustrialized zones. There's all kinds of things you can do. But you know what Rahm Emanuel suggested that they do? All those people need to learn to code. They need to go back to school, Nicole, and they need to learn to code. In other words, you know, in other words, the blame is on them.
Yeah.
This is not an answer to the problem. This is a way of shifting the blame for the problem from an incredibly bungled, mismanaged economy, you know, where we've shifted all the wealth upwards and given everything to Silicon Valley. Shift the blame from the people who engineered that, like Rahm Emanuel and his friends, shift the blame from them to you because you didn't learn how to code. He just said this the other day.
Well, it's like, I forget who said it.
A party that says things like that is not interested in winning.
No, I get it. And look, Rahm Emanuel, thankfully, is not in power. And I understand that he and Biden have bad blood between them, which is a good thing.
Yeah, but they'll bring him back.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, because they tend to fail upwards. So
the number of people that they have to choose from is very limited, you know, and
really,
I'm sorry. If you got me going, I'm so cynical.
The one who's supposed to be cynical. So we're coming to the end of the hour and we haven't solved anything. So let me ask you at the beginning.
What are you talking about? I've solved everything and I solved it 20 years ago. And all I've done all these years is I say the same thing over and over and over again and nobody listens, you know. If you guys would just listen.
We'd have Bernie Sanders as president. We would have, Katie Porter or AOC as Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Right? No, this would move us in the right direction,
Of course. But, anyhow.
All right. We got two minutes left.
And then lastly, I'm done with all this.
Why?
I'm
going to
do other things.
Yeah. You said that. We spoke last time when we were talking about The People your new book.
I always say that.
And you said this is your last political book. And now you're saying you're not a commentator anymore. So what happens next? You're going to run for president.
No. I'm going to write books about, you know, art.
Okay. I've taken up painting.
Oh, yeah?
I have. My
first book was about the advertising industry. Did you ever read this one?
No. What I can't see it.
Cool. It's about the 60s, the 1960s. Oh, yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
And so I'm basically going to go back to where I left off with that one.
Okay.
And sort of resume what I was working on back in the 90s.
I understand. If I had my druthers, I'd go back to music
backwards.
Radio.
I got into politics accidentally. You know, I wrote What's the Matter with Kansas just because I was intrigued by this America's big move to the right. You know, I thought that was kind of weird what was going on. I wanted to write about it.
And then
I got stuck, you know, and now I can't get out.
You can get out.
I can get out. Yeah. And I'm going to, damn it.
All right. I'll happily follow
you. But not
you.
Today. And not today. For a couple months. And we can talk about this more later on.
Awesome. Thomas Frank, again, the new book is The People Know. I'm guessing when the paperback comes out, you'll have a nice new foreword for, you know, the election.
I don't know about that. But one thing I will do is that when the paperback comes out, I'm going to go on an actual book tour.
Oh, good.
And okay. I'll get to go around and see people in person again.
That'd be cool.
I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be exciting. I haven't done that in a long time.
I hear you. Thomas Frank, we're out of time. We're coming to the end of the hour. It is always a pleasure to talk with you. I so appreciate it. And
the pleasure is all mine, Nicole.
To happier days. And, you know, a real... liberal Democratic Party. Thank you, Tom Frank.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
It would be awesome.
All right.
We'll talk
see you later.
Soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. And with that, we're done. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you Monday. Bye. And tune into the broadcast tonight. I'm guest hosting.